Pull up a chair. I want you to smell something first, not avgas, not hot oil, on a warm cowling. I want you to smell sawdust, fresh-cut balsa and birch, and the sharp sweetness of casein glue curling up off a workbench, because that's the smell of one of the fastest, deadliest airplanes of the Second World War being born, not in a steel foundry, in a furniture shop. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and you're listening to The Hangar. Today we're going to talk about an airplane that had no business being as good as it was. An airplane the experts said couldn't work, shouldn't work, and had no place in a modern air force. And then it went out and made just about everybody eat their words. The de Havilland Mosquito. They called her the Wooden Wonder. Some of the crews called her the Timber Terror. And by the time the war was over, she'd flown as a bomber, a night fighter, a photo recon ship, a pathfinder, a ship killer, and a low-level precision writer that could put a bomb through a specific window. One airplane. All of that. Let me tell you how she came to be. Now, before we get too deep, a quick word from the folks who help keep this show on the air. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. And if you know somebody who just soloed, there's your gift sorted. All right, back to the sawdust. The year is 1938, heading into 39. War clouds are stacking up over Europe like a line of thunderstorms you can't outclimb. And Geoffrey de Havilland, the man behind the company, has an idea that makes the Air Ministry wrink their noses. Everybody else is thinking heavier. Everybody else is thinking bombers bristling with gun turrets, big crews, tons of armor plate, defending themselves in tight formations. That was the doctrine. A bomber was a flying fortress, and it fought its way in and fought its way out. De Havilland looked at all that and said, "What if we did the opposite? What if we built a bomber with no guns at all?" Now here's where it gets interesting. His thinking went like this. Every gun turret is weight. Every gunner is weight. And a bigger fuselage to hold him, and more fuel to haul all of it. Strip all of that off. Two men, two engines, and make the thing so fast that nothing in the sky can catch it. You don't need to shoot back at a fighter you've already left behind. And the second heresy was the material. He wanted to build it out of wood. The Air Ministry just about fell out of their chairs. Wood in the 1940s, everyone had moved on to stress metal skin, aluminum monocoque, the modern way. Wood was for the last war, the biplane crates of 1917. Building a frontline bomber out of plywood sounded like showing up to a gunfight with a slingshot. But de Havilland had reasons, and they were smart ones. Britain was about to be at war, aluminum was going to be desperately short, and every ounce of it was spoken for. Skilled metal workers were going to be scarce too. But wood, Britain had wood, and Britain had thousands of craftsmen who worked wood every single day. Cabinet makers, piano builders, coach builders who made the bodies of fine automobiles. You didn't need an aircraft factory to build a mosquito. You needed a furniture factory, and that's exactly what happened. When production ramped up, the work went out to companies that had never built an airplane in their lives. Piano manufacturers, a company that made wardrobes and writing desks. Coach builders. Cabinet shops scattered across the English countryside, quietly turning out wing spars and fuselage shells between the hedgerows where no German bomber would ever think to look. Let me tell you how they actually made her, because it's beautiful. The fuselage was built in two halves, left and right, like a giant Easter egg. They'd lay it up over a big concrete or mahogany mold. A skin of plywood on the outside, then a core of balsa wood, then another skin of plywood on the inside. A wood sandwich, light, incredibly stiff and strong. They'd install the control cables and the wiring and the pipes right there, while the fuselage was still open and easy to reach. Then they'd glue the two halves together around it like closing a book. The wing was one single piece, spanning the whole airplane, built up from spars of spruce and Douglas fir and skinned in that same plywood. The glue in the early days was casein, made from milk protein, believe it or not. Later they moved to a stronger synthetic resin, because casein could soften up in the heat and damp of tropical postings. Anybody who flew mosquitoes in the jungles of Burma and the Pacific learned that lesson the hard way. But when she was built right, she was a thing of art, smooth as a piano. No rivet heads sticking up into the wind, no overlapping metal panels, just a slick, seamless, polished wooden skin, and smooth means fast. Now let's hang the engines. Two Rolls-Royce Merlins, the same magnificent V12 that powered the Spitfire and the Hurricane and later made the P-51 Mustang into a legend. Two of them, one on each wing, and when those Merlins lit off, they didn't rattle and pop like a radial. They snarled, a deep, hard, ripping snarl that people who heard it over their villages never forgot. Put those two Merlins on that slick little wooden airframe with no gun turrets weighing her down, And what do you get? You get a bomber that flies at close to 400 miles an hour. I want you to sit with that number for a second. When the Mosquito first went into service in 1941 and 42, she was as fast or faster than the enemy fighters trying to intercept her. A Messerschmitt 109 had to be already up high, already in position, already diving, just to get a shot. If a Mosquito crew saw the fighter coming and firewalled those throttles, the argument was usually over. They'd just walk away from it in level flight. The doctrine everybody laughed at turned out to be right. Speed was the armor. The men who flew her loved her the way you love an airplane that takes care of you. Two crew, side by side, or nearly so, in a snug cockpit that smelled of glue and oil and rubber. The pilot on the left, the navigator right beside him, close enough to bump elbows. On a long night over Germany, that closeness mattered. You weren't alone in a turret somewhere down a dark fuselage. Your partner was right there at your shoulder. Now, here's where the Mosquito went from being merely fast to being flat-out legendary, because she could do the impossible thing. She could bomb with a surgeon's precision. Let me take you to Amiens in occupied France. February 1944, Operation Jericho. The Gestapo is holding a prison full of French resistance fighters, and word comes down that a mass execution is coming. The only hope for those prisoners is to blow holes in the prison walls so they can run for it. But the prison is in the middle of a town, miss, and you kill the very people you're trying to save. Who do you send for a job like that? You send Mosquitoes. They came in at rooftop height, down on the deck, so low the crews could see the faces of people on the ground looking up, snow on the fields, gray winter light, and they laid their bombs right into the base of those outer walls, precisely, deliberately, cracking them open. Prisoners poured out through the gaps and ran for the countryside. It cost lives, it wasn't clean, war never is. But no other airplane in the world could even have attempted it. They did it again and again. They put bombs through the front doors of Gestapo headquarters in Oslo, in The Hague, in Copenhagen. Roaring down city streets below the level of the rooftops, tossing their bombs through the walls of a single specific building, and pulling up over the far side, precision from a wooden airplane built by cabinet makers. And then there was the other job, the night job. They fitted some of them with radar in the nose and a battery of cannon in the belly and turned them into night fighters. On the darkest nights over Britain and over the continent, a Mosquito would slip up quietly behind a German bomber, the crew hunting by that little glowing radar screen, and open up. The cannon would hammer, 4 20-millimeter guns and machine guns, and it was over in a heartbeat. They flew as pathfinders too, going in ahead of the big bomber streams to mark the targets with flares so the heavies coming behind would know where to aim. They flew photo reconnaissance, stripped of everything, flying so high and so fast that they'd just cruise over Germany in broad daylight, take their pictures, and come home before anybody could lay a glove on them. One airframe, a dozen different jobs, and she did all of them well. Here's the number that ought to stop you cold. Of all the Royal Air Force bombers that flew over occupied Europe, the Mosquito had the lowest loss rate of any of them. The wooden airplane, the experts said, was a bad idea, brought her crews home more reliably than the armored, gun-bristling giants ever did, because you can't shoot down what you can't catch. There's a story I love, and I'll tell it the way I heard it, so take the exact words with a grain of salt. Hermann Göring, the head of the German Luftwaffe, is supposed to have stood in front of his own people, absolutely furious, and said something to the effect of, "I turn green and yellow with envy." The British build a beautiful wooden airplane that every piano factory over there can produce, and they fly it over our cities in broad daylight, and we can't do a thing about it. Whether he said it exactly that way or not, the frustration was real. The Germans tried to build their own version and never really cracked it. The Mosquito stayed one of a kind. Now I told you casing glue and damp and tropical heat didn't get along. That's part of why so few original Mosquitoes survive today. Metal airplanes you can pull out of a swamp or a desert or dig out of a glacier and rebuild 50 years later. We've talked about airplanes just like that on this show, but wood rots. Wood gets eaten. Wood that sat out in the weather for a few decades after the war, mostly just went back to the earth. For a long stretch, there wasn't a single Mosquito flying anywhere in the world. Every one of them had gone quiet, that gorgeous Merlin snarl gone from the sky. And here's the part that ought to warm the heart of every restorer listening right now. A handful of people refused to let that stand. Down in New Zealand, a company called Avstex and craftsmen working from the original de Havilland drawings went and did the thing everybody thought couldn't be done again. They rebuilt Mosquitoes from the wood up, found the old molds or made new ones, sourced the right timber, laid up those fuselage halves the old way, the sandwich of ply and balsa, glued and clamped and cured, rebuilt those one-piece wooden wings. And on a good day now, at an air show, if you're standing in the right spot, you can hear it again. two Merlins winding up, that hard, ripping snarl coming across the field, and a sleek wooden airplane the color of the sky lifts off and shows a whole new generation what the wooden wonder could do. I get a little choked up about that, and I'm not ashamed of it, because that sound was gone, and people who cared brought it back with their own two hands. So the next time somebody tells you the old way won't work, that the material's wrong, the idea's outdated, the experts have already decided, you think about a bomber built by furniture makers out of plywood and milk glue that flew faster than the fighters, bombed through a single window, and came home more often than anything else in the sky. Sometimes the crazy idea is just the right idea wearing a disguise. If you want to read more, most of what I laid out today traces back to the de Havilland Company's own records, the Royal Air Force's histories of the Amiens raid and the Pathfinder squadrons, and the good people at Avstex and the Warbird community who documented every step of bringing these ships back to life. Go dig into it. It's a rabbit hole worth falling down. You can find us anytime at RadioHanger.com. I'm Taildragger. Keep the sawdust swept and the glue fresh, and I'll see you back here in the hangar.